Good morning. My name is Hope, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Center for American Progress Press Briefing on Spurring Job Creation conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Anna Solner, you may begin your conference.
Thanks so much, Hope, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. If you need to reach me at any point, my number is 202-492-2967, and I also want to let you all know that the brief has posted this morning at AmericanProgress.org. Just as a reminder, this call will be recorded. Audio will be available after the call has stopped, about 10 minutes afterwards, and by participating in this call, you are consenting to being recorded. Today, we're bringing together four CAP experts to discuss President Barack Obama's anticipated plan regarding job creation. Giving us an overview of the plan as well as a brief will be Michael Ettlinger, Vice President for Economic Policy here at CAP, Donna Cooper, Senior Fellow, who's going to address job creation by investments in infrastructure, Sarah Rosen-Wortel, Executive Vice President for Policy, who will be discussing strategies for recovering the housing market, as well as Richard Caperton, Senior Energy Policy Analyst, who will be talking about retrofits in the ways in which they can make the country more energy efficient. Michael, can you kick us off?
Yep, sure. So thank you, Anna. All of you know the president will be announcing a jobs plan soon, and our view is that the president's plan needs to be at the scale of the problem. We need millions of jobs, and he should propose a plan that creates millions of jobs. The president needs to show that someone in Washington is taking seriously the most important issue facing the country. The plan also needs to test the boundaries of what Congress is willing to do. The idea in the House of Representatives that slashing spending and taxes are the keys to creating jobs is just economic nonsense. No one serious thinks that's the answer, not Wall Street analysts, not economists. So the president should not start off trying to meet halfway people who only offer completely incoherent economic policy. The president should offer a plan that actually creates jobs, the jobs we need, and then take it to Congress and take it to the people. Offering a weak proposal and then complaining that Congress won't take action isn't the way to create jobs. What might create jobs is raising the stakes with Congress and pushing them hard to do something. There are lots of places in the economy where job creation can come from, and the president's plan should explore them all. What we're releasing today has three essential elements to a job creation plan. Not a complete package, but three elements that we believe a serious proposal has to include. We show what, at a minimum, should be done in infrastructure, housing, and energy efficiency. These are areas where substantial number of jobs could be created quickly, where there are significant economic problems that need to be addressed, where there is a significant private capital to be leveraged, and where most of the jobs created would be in the private sector. In total, these proposals would create about 1.3 million jobs per year for 2 years. Again, this isn't all that needs to be done, but it's hard to imagine a credible plan that does not touch on each of these areas. Now I'll turn it over to Donna Cooper to talk about the infrastructure part of what we're discussing today.
Thanks, Michael. Obviously, the president has talked about investing in infrastructure for several years, and the first stimulus package pumped about $150 billion into infrastructure investment. And what we saw from that is that those kinds of investments boost demand for domestically produced construction materials like asphalt, concrete, and steel. And so most of these asphalt, concrete, and steel companies are small and medium-sized businesses that are spread across the country. So unlike other potential stimulative activities like a tax cut, we know that when you invest in infrastructure, you're spending your money domestically, and you're just spending it in ways that are going to boost demand and employ people domestically in small towns and medium towns across America. In addition, the benefit of infrastructure investments is obviously that it boosts construction employment. We're now in an 11-year low in construction employment in America. The only period in the last several years where that was different was for the 2 years in which we had the stimulus spending, and that bumped up construction employment by about 17%, higher than it would have been had we not made those investments. So we strongly encourage the President and Congress to embrace a far-reaching infrastructure plan as outlined in the brief, which we think could not only mobilize private investment, nearly $60 million in private investment on top of about $65 million of public investment, but would cause boost in demand in small and medium-sized businesses and cause a rebound in our construction sector. And given the degree to which we have disrepair of our infrastructure, while it is the case in infrastructure spending that there is a six-month typically ramp-up period, there is plenty of work and plenty of pent-up demand that once federal action is taken, states and localities can begin to pull the plans off the shelves and let the contracts, as they demonstrated they could do during the first stimulus package, and significantly improve their local economies. So we think it's critical that any plan do this, and we think that it's urgent because we are coming up into a period where higher unemployment rates are going to make it harder to turn around the economy, and this is a very fast way to ensure growth in domestic employment.
Donna,
and I'll turn it over to,
Thanks. It's Sarah Wortel, and I just meant to correct that was 60 billion, not million, right, Donna?
I'm sorry.
That's
Thank
correct.
You, Sarah.
No problem. The weak housing market and the overhang of debt over families is an enormous drag on the economy, and so clearly we believe that this fall the President must focus attention again on efforts to jumpstart the housing market. Falling home values chill sales, housing starts, and the ability of homeowners to renovate or create demand in other sectors, start new businesses themselves, and of course those unemployed construction workers aren't able to spend either. There's no single silver bullet. No one solution in this multifaceted problem. But the economic crisis demands that every tool be reexamined to get through the debt and foreclosure overhang as quickly as possible. Among the steps we believe that the President should insist on, and this is not a complete list, one, the GSEs should restructure a far larger number of the existing mortgages in their portfolio to reduce monthly payments or outstanding principal, which would help borrowers stay in their homes. There are too many limitations on the existing programs that must be removed so that more mortgages are refinanced, and that's in their own best interest financially in the long term. An idea that CAP has supported since 2008 is where the government is an insurer or guarantor of the distressed mortgage. We also can mandate that there's mediation between the home buyer, the homeowner, and the lender before foreclosure and avoid many unnecessary foreclosures. Evidence is clear that these mediation programs find far better than the servicer's own processes avoidable foreclosures. Legislation third should be adopted that give bankruptcy courts the authority to reduce the principal amount of home loans in Chapter 13 debt restructuring plans. That would put pressure also on more servicers to do more loan modifications before bankruptcy, including loans outside of the GSE portfolio, which the first two ideas cannot touch. Fourth, finally, we simply have to divert some of the huge inventory of foreclosed homes for sale, which are depressing the values of all other homes in the area. FHA and the GSEs must accelerate the pace of their recently announced initiative to consider how to rehab and rent pools of these properties in relevant markets or sell them to those who will rent them out. We've got to take advantage of the efficiencies of bulk rental rather than single one-at-a-time transfer of stock from homeownership to rental housing. The administration has indicated an interest in pursuing this approach, but we need to accelerate it much more rapidly. This is an opportunity to use government incentives to perform energy efficiency retrofits on these properties as well, which will increase the home values, save tenants more money, and boost demand for workers. To accelerate the pace of these projects, of this initiative, pilots should begin immediately, which should dedicate and we should ask Congress to dedicate subsidy to pay for rehab costs employing workers right away, to jumpstart this model until it can become better embedded and there's more infrastructure for it in the larger economy. Richard?
Thanks, Sarah. This is Richard Caperton. And the third thing that must be included in the President's plan is a serious proposal to retrofit homes and buildings. No one denies that energy efficiency investments are economically sound investments. These save consumers money, and they put people back to work. And each year, we waste $130 billion in the United States through lost energy, and we can stop wasting that money through energy efficiency investments. But it's important to remember that we're putting these in a jobs plan and not an energy plan, and that's because energy efficiency investments help some of the hardest hit parts of the economy. There's a construction, manufacturing, and the small business sector. And it helps construction because we've got hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people looking for work in that sector, where the unemployment, as Donna said, is well above the national average. It helps manufacturing because the vast majority of manufactured products used in retrofits are made in America. For instance, 99% of duct sheet metal and 98% of vinyl windows that are really important energy efficiency investments are made right here in the United States. And it helps small business because 90% of the companies involved in retrofits and energy efficiency improvements are small businesses. So these investments are clearly critical job creators. Now, our plan that's outlined in the issue brief here has three specific policies, each of which engages the private sector. These have been proposed before, and they have bipartisan support, and we think it's time for the president to make a serious push for these. These are Home Star, Building Star, and Rural Star. And they each work in different ways based on the tools that are available now and based on the best way to get uptake quickly and put people back to work. Home Star provides rebates for homeowners looking to make energy efficiency improvements. Building Star provides a multitude of incentives for owners of commercial and multifamily housing to make those energy efficiency investments. And Rural Star provides innovative microloans using existing financing tools and the rural electric cooperative infrastructure that stretches all across this country. The specifics are in the issue brief, and I'm happy to take questions on those. But it's important to remember, again, that these are bipartisan policies that engage the private sector and benefit all 50 states.
Thanks so much, Richard, and thank you to all of our speakers. Hope, we're ready for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Carrie Brown.
Hello. I had a question for Michael. Is there concern, and for anybody else, but I mean, is there serious concern right now that the president is, or the White House is looking at a plan that is not going to be as bold as you would like, that's more focused on what can get through the Congress than what is needed to convey sort of a bigger vision about what it will take to get out of the jolty economy? Is that what you're speaking to, that there is this concern? Do you have an indication that the White House is sort of engaged in that debate and looking so
well? I think that, you know, until we see the president's plan, until the president announces his plan, we don't know exactly what the president's plan is. I think our main point isn't whether, you know, we have a particular concern or not. The main point is that we just, you know, we think what we think, that the plan ought to be one that is at the scale of the problem and does the things we've outlined. So I don't think it's, you know, a particular concern or not a concern, but we think we need to kind of say what we think the direction it ought to go. I mean, I do think that what we've been seeing out of the White House over the last few months has not been big plans and ambitious plans in terms of job creation, and we're hoping that he takes this opportunity as he announces sort of puts it all together, that they get more ambitious in terms of job creation.
Thank you. Next question.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line with Deb Moore with Peterly Education Group.
Hi, this is Deb Moore with Peterly Education Group, School Planning and College Planning and Management. My question is, when you talk infrastructure, I hear roads, I hear bridges, I hear things along those lines. My interest is in whether in the infrastructure you're considering schools as part of this, especially considering that on the American Civil Society of Civil Engineers report cards, schools actually, for conditions, score lower than bridges, wastewater treatment plants, and things along those lines.
Great question. Yes, we do. This is Donna. We do think that there needs to be a ramp up of federal investment for a period of 2 years in school construction. mostly for school rehab, because that can actually get to contract faster. And there's plenty of school rehab, as you point out, that could be done, both on the retrofit of their energy systems, as well as installation of new windows, with obviously for energy purposes, but also just in general, schools need those, as well as roofs. And many of the schools have very, very antiquated water systems. So there's a lot of work that can be done in schools, and it's a relatively expeditious way to employ people, and again, to employ people in their local communities. And so, you're onto something there, and we think that school construction should be part of the package, along with the traditional infrastructure investments, roads, bridges, ports, and also our energy infrastructure, our telecommunications infrastructure. We are not proposing a narrow infrastructure package because there's such demand in each element of America's platform for commerce and civil society.
Yeah, we have just, if you look on page 4 of the report, we have a minimum of $10 billion going to school-related spending.
Thank you.
Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Lisa Mascaro with the Los Angeles Times.
Hi, hey, thanks for taking the call. And I just had a quick question on some of the elements that are not in the report that have been topics that have been circulating here in Washington for, items that Congress might be dealing with when it gets back, namely the payroll tax extension and also the talk about the repatriation revenue. And I'm just wondering if you could address a little bit, what kind of value you think either of those proposals might have on job creation, starting maybe with that payroll tax, extending the payroll tax holiday, or the second half of that, which would be, extending the tax holiday to businesses that the employer side, for employees that, hire workers, either getting some sort of payroll tax holiday on their side or some sort of, credit for hiring workers like we saw in the HIRE Act in 2010. And then also, if you have a minute, to just discuss the repatriation issue as
well.
Yeah,
I think on the payroll tax, yeah, we absolutely think that the payroll tax should be extended. It's just our point. That's just treading water, and we should do that because we don't want to lose ground. But we need things that's going to improve the job situation, not just tread water, and other things along those lines, including expanding on that on the payroll tax break, or offering credits against the payroll tax are definitely. Would be helpful and could be a very viable part of the plan. So, as I said, and I think we've been trying to be very careful to say this, what we're listing here is not the complete list of what should be done, but just three things that we think should be components of it. With respect to repatriation, it's just that is not what's going to create the kinds of jobs we need to get the kinds of job creation we need. So, there's a big fight over that. The companies that would benefit from it are pushing hard on it, but it's not really going to be a central piece of job creation, even at the most optimistic assessment of its worth. And I think it would make it harder to achieve longer-term corporate tax reform if we did that as a standalone item.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of David Clark with Inside Washington Published.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having this call. I was interested in the proposal for smart grid and other clean energy infrastructure. Do you see the policy proposals needing to be adopted in order to move that whole element of your plan along?
In the infrastructure space, we have two sort of energy discussions going on in this brief. In the infrastructure space, the existing 1705 loan program, which was expanded upon when the economic stimulus package was passed, was very effective at mobilizing private investment with public investment to create
smart grid investments, energy generation, and energy transmission investments. And we recommend that that program continue. It's a relatively efficient process. With a $2.5 billion loan subsidy, we can leverage $25 billion in federal loans for a total, at least if we replicate what's happened in the last two or so years, for about $36 billion in investment in transmission and generation capacity. So, you know, there is substantial demand in this sector. They're looking for signals from the federal government, and they're looking how to bring down the cost of projects. So we think it's critical to do, but we also think there's a more energy work that can happen through the three programs that Richard highlighted that I'll ask him to talk about as well.
Yeah, in the long term, we need a lot of new policies in the energy sector to drive massive growth there. In the short term, though, what we really like about these specific infrastructure investments is that there's already the systems in place to get this money flowing today. The DOE loan guarantee program simply needs more money, and that's what we're talking about in this proposal. There's a significant backlog there of applicants who are looking for money for infrastructure investments that are ready to employ Americans right now, as long as if there was just more money there. And on the energy efficiency side, again, these are programs that can ramp up quickly and create jobs.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Bernie Becker with the Hill newspaper.
Recall, I know you guys said this was just sort of the parts that need to be in an overall larger deal, but you know, how big of an overall package do you think is needed? And granted, you might not want to get into specifics, but what other areas do you think might need assistance or might should be touched on in a larger package?
I think that there are a lot of areas that ought to be in a bigger package. I mean, just off the top of my head, I think one of the big problems that in terms of jobs in recent months in particular, has been the layoffs that have happened at the state and local level. So helping, helping out states some, I think, would be a sensible thing to do just in terms of the arithmetic of where we're losing jobs. Particularly, we're losing hundreds of thousands of teachers, which, cannot be good for our long-term economic future to have class sizes going up. And obviously it hurts in terms of the short term on jobs. There are also various things in terms of spurring demand that would really help. So, extending the unemployment insurance again, various safety net provisions. I think also national service jobs is something that people have talked about that could be an area to help out with youth unemployment, which is a big problem. So I think there's kind of a long list that I think everyone's familiar with, and I think that there's lots of smaller things that could be done to create relatively small buckets of jobs individually that should be part of a comprehensive plan.
Thank you, Michael. Operator, do we have any more questions?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you so much. Michael, any closing thoughts?
No.
Okay. Well, we appreciate everyone participating today. Again, call audio will be available about 10 minutes after the call has concluded. If you have any other further questions, you may reach me directly at 202-492-2967. Again, the brief on job creation is posted on AmericanProgress.org. Thank you again for joining us today.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.